Whatever, Matthew. I'm just saying that I take pride in making fun of Bill Simmons
just,
very thoroughly.
Why don't I
just
tack on those?
You do it however you want.
To what I have.
Go for it.
Reach up to a star and bring it down.
All right, welcome back, Sean Kemp Redemption. It is August 5th, and in Chicago, it's overcast. Not bad though. And who with me? Who's with me?
I am Matt, and I'm with you.
Matt has an iPhone now. David,
I have an iPhone. I can actually look the weather up on this.
The technology learning curve is something we're experiencing in real time. This is David, and let me say, I'm really excited about this Mike Dunleavy signing.
I'm pretty excited about it, too. We'll get to that. Yeah. John, you are not in Chicago. Where are you at?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
Where in Brooklyn?
In Sunset Park.
Oh, how's that going?
Fifth Ave and 62nd Street.
Sounds good.
I'm near the ocean.
What's your public transit situation like, John?
I'm off the N and the R. It's not ideal. It's not bad. I can get to the city fast. I can't get to anywhere in Brooklyn that fast.
And Matthew, you were going to move to New York City.
I was.
But now you're not.
But now I'm not. Now I'm in Chicago for the time being. So
at least until we're done with this podcast.
I'm in Chicago at least through tonight.
All right, that sounds good. We haven't done this for a while. We're going to start with the finals because that happened. Does anybody have any reactions to that? David?
It was a great finals, very entertaining to watch, except for the part where I hated both teams.
Hmm.
But once I divorced myself from that fact, it was actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
One of the best finals in recent memory.
John, any thoughts on the finals?
I will read our text exchange.
Oh, that's a good
from
idea.
From Game 6.
Okay, please, go ahead.
Chris, at 12:17 a.m. June 19th, you said, professional NBA announcer says that was a foul. For 46 minutes. I couldn't explain NBA basketball to an alien. To which I said, Ginobili's missed call was very crucial. And then to which you said, yes, in the replay at the end of the fourth, and players not getting back to posture refs, and 20 timeouts. The NBA is a series of basketball-like events sprinkled within, let's say, bureaucracy.
That was
best
kindly putting it,
best player off the
yeah.
court for deciding two plays? Yeah. The primary strategic elements of the game are gaming the officials and intentionally stopping play. Is there any other sport like this? To which I said, soccer, kind of. To which you said, except for the nearly infinite timeouts part, and there aren't 60 penalty kicks a game. And the rules are consistent for the entire match.
I think that's true. I'm pretty sure that soccer games are officiated equally throughout.
That was it. And you know, what happened at a very crucial play was that, like, they called the instant replay.
Right, which allows Duncan to get back in the game.
What's that?
Which allows him to get back in the game.
No, Tim Duncan can't be substituted back in the game, but they illegally substituted him.
Yes.
And that would have been probably a huge detail if the Spurs went on to win the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, you know. Matthew, any thoughts on the finals? I think that sums up my feelings. I have nothing else to say besides that.
Yeah, I mean, these are all good thoughts. Close, well-played finals, unlikable teams. I would just quickly add...
But you love the Spurs.
I grew to sympathize with the Spurs for their consistent excellence. I felt I could relate to that. But... I think that that wasn't meant as a joke. I think that it was. I think that one negative thing I want to add to sort of this negativity is that I really think the finals, I know that it's at the end of his career and it's unfair to evaluate his career based, you know, on these finals or on these NBA playoffs, but I really do think the finals is part of the overall kind of, I don't know, case against Manu Ginobili, or just sort of a case that Manu Ginobili is a little overrated as an NBA player. I guess
I don't think it's unfair.
I think that, like,
Tim Duncan's at the end of his career and he played amazingly.
The nut of my argument here is that when Manu Ginobili has a good game or has a good series, it seems to me like announcers, columnists, sports writers really play it up. But when he doesn't have a good game or doesn't have a good series, he doesn't get covered as much. And I think that the reason why is that, I mean, Ginobili has a somewhat limited responsibility as the, you know, even at the height of his career, he was the third best Spur. And, you know, a distant third, but, you know, he was close to Parker, but Duncan always had a lot more responsibility than him. And I just think that, like, he's someone who's more comparable, ultimately, to someone like Robert Horry or someone like Byron Scott. Or not as good as Chauncey Billups. We're talking about somebody, Tayshaun Prince. We're talking about somebody whose responsibilities...
He's better than Tayshaun Prince.
He's better than Tayshaun Prince. He's better than all those players that I mentioned, but he's like those players in that he's a role player. So when he plays well, everyone notices, and when he sucks, no one notices. I mean, compare that to somebody... Like, you
I don't
know,
remember any of Vinny Johnson's bad games.
Vinny Johnson, I mean, he's better than Vinny Johnson. But I mean, like, no, but like somebody like Dwayne Wade, when Dwayne Wade has a bad game, you know, people notice. Obviously, when LeBron James or Tim Duncan or Tony Parker have bad games, people notice. But Ginobili's kind of had this charmed...
Well, they have a lot more responsibility.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying about Ginobili, is that he's had this kind of charmed career.
It's because he's balding.
Where people say that he's a great clutch player when he has a good clutch game, and then when he doesn't have a good clutch game, nobody really notices. And I guess the upshot of all this is that, you know, that's fine to get this sort of selective positive attention if you're somebody like Robert Horry or somebody like Derek Fisher or somebody, you know, like Shane Battier. But this is a guy that people say is going to the Hall of Fame. This is somebody that people say, you know, was an all-star. And I just think that he doesn't deserve to really be viewed as a star. And I you know, maybe he belongs in the Hall of Fame if you believe that, you know, Argentina should have one Hall of Famer or something. But other than that,
I don't know. Nocioni, you don't think he's going to make it?
I think he's had a stronger career than Nocioni. I feel pretty good about
so,
that.
So you don't think he's clutch?
I don't think he's clutch. I think that...
Like, that his reputation has preceded him, has carried him to the point? To this point that he's at now.
Clutch is a really, let's not walk down the clutch route. He's old.
Yeah, he's old. Inconsistent.
I mean, there's some...
I still think he's... I mean, when he was at his apex, I mean, yeah, I thought he was clutch. I will give you that, yes, like, even at his... even in his prime, he was inconsistent in the clutch.
There are certain... I don't know. There's certain, the 2005 playoffs, his playoff statistics were much better than his regular season statistics. But overall, it goes up and down. He wasn't very good in 2004. I don't know. I just think that he's gotten, you know, sort of an overblown reputation.
And it has nothing to do with his skin pigmentation, I'm sure. All right. Next topic, Matthew.
Is he white?
What do you got? Kind of. He can pass as white.
He's Italian, Argentinian.
The other, just real quick thing about the finals, there's a lot of, like, changing of rotations, like, entire games where, like, Chris Anderson would play, like, 30 minutes and then wouldn't play at all, and then, like, Shane Battier would play, like, 30 minutes, wouldn't play at all. I don't know if this was really smart or not. It seemed to sort of disrupt Miami a little, but maybe it actually helped them. I don't really know, but it seems like for a guy with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh on his team, that Eric Spoelstra does a lot of hands-on coaching in terms of you know, the rotations in terms of diagramming plays instead of in terms of putting people at different positions. He just seems like a very, like,
well, I mean, after the top
coach.
Of when your roster is that top heavy, everything's in the middle. You can just swap those pieces in and out because,
yeah,
you know, you are playing matchups. I mean, they're true role players in that they can really do one thing and that's it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. So I guess, yeah. So maybe, like, players 4 through 10 on Miami are kind of equal. And
so do you think that's cunning calculation on Spoelstra's part or indecision?
It's neither. It's in between. It's just common sense to a certain part. I mean, there are certain series, you know, where Chris Anderson is going to be a lot more effective. And Shane Battier, you know, I think it's pretty easy to see when Shane Battier is coming out and looks like total fucking shit that maybe I shouldn't put him out there on the floor for a while, or if other teams are going to exploit him or have another role player to exploit Battier.
I think it might be cunning, but it also seems a little like overdramatic to have like Battier play 35 minutes in one NBA Finals game and then get like a DMP CD in the next one. That just seems like over coaching or unhelpful, but I don't know. I mean, maybe he did a good job. I don't really know enough about it, but it seems. I mean, like, you know, like the glory teams on the Bulls, like there weren't games where like Steve Kerr would play 35 minutes and then not play at all.
It's because they were better players. If that Steve Kerr was on the Heat, he would never sit down. He would play 40 minutes a game.
Maybe
absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
I thought it was really more indecision. I mean, like,
yeah,
that's superficially, that's like how it looks. Because it takes, I mean, his rotations all through that the whole postseason were very sporadic, and I mean, it looks like indecision. Some could say that it's very strategic. I mean, like Chris said, like, you know, interchanging one for the other when they all do the same thing. They just have a shitty bench.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. It's having a shitty bench. And it doesn't really matter how you deal with it.
You think they have a shitty bench? I don't know.
Chalmers is okay.
Compared to, like you said, the Bulls championship teams, yeah, their bench sucks.
Okay.
There are some players that can be interchanged there, I think, pretty easily. And, yeah. This brings me to topic number two. Which is, if you had Michael Jordan at his apex, who is the worst player that could be the second best player on that team? Thinking about this with LeBron and Wade and Bosh. But, all right, so I'm giving you Michael Jordan, and the second best player on your team is Sean Marion. Can you win multiple championships?
I mean, I would say yes, but it still depends on everyone else on the team, too.
But the rest
leaving
is your,
that, leaving that open to anything?
Yes.
I'd say yes.
Yes, Sean Marion
at his
peak.
Sean Marion at his peak, yeah.
And Jordan at his peak could win multiple championships. Matthew.
Yes, because in 2011, Dallas won the title with Marion, Jason Kidd, Tyson Chandler, and Jason Terry in a four-way tie for the second-best player on that team. I mean, if there are other good role players on that team, a team with Jordan at his peak and Sean Marion at his peak would definitely win multiple championships.
John, do you agree?
I didn't agree until Matt brought up that Dallas team.
Yeah, that was a very good point. All right, well, let's set the bar lower.
I think Tyson Chandler was a little bit better than him. I don't know.
But, all right.
Yeah, yeah, set the bar lower because, like, even Marion at his apex, MJ needed Pippen to...
Yeah,
I mean, MJ can't guard.
I'm starting high. We're
going to
go lower. What if the second best player was Luol Deng? Luol Deng, Michael Jordan, and the rest of the Heat roster. Could that win multiple championships? The Heat roster minus the big three.
Wait, Jordan, Deng, the rest of the Heat roster?
Yeah, and now you get like someone else. One other player that's like not that good. I don't care who.
Danny Granger level?
No, way below that, like
Heat,
Will Perdue level.
The 4th through 12th best players on the Heat, plus Jordan, plus Deng.
Yes. Could that team win multiple championships? Could it win one? Jordan is peak with Luol Deng. You don't think they could win a championship. He's an all-star.
They could maybe go through the NBA the way Olajuwon's the playoffs, the way Olajuwon's 95 Rockets did, where they win, where they get a ton of great luck and they win a bunch of close games based on Olajuwon being by far the best player. But I don't see it happening. If this other player that you're giving me, is sort of like a Horace Grant, Charles Oakley.
No, lower than that quality. Just you get another bench player, essentially.
I get another bench player. Unless that other bench player is, you know, I can't.
Okay,
think
but
of,
if
Luol
Deng
so.
Is the second best player, John, do the Bulls win a championship or lots of them?
With the Heat roster still?
More or less, yeah.
With basically Deng number 2 and then 3 through 5 on the starting lineup are all shitty role players?
Yes. You still got Ray Allen.
Yeah, you still got... I mean, yeah, you had shooters. How good is my center? Chris Anderson good?
Sure, yeah.
Can win... I mean, MJ could drop 50 in the finals like it was nothing, so...
All right, you maybe one championship, but not multiple?
Yeah, I'm going to say maybe one.
Okay, David?
Three-fourths of one championship.
Three-fourths of
so
one?
No.
No, really?
I feel like...
Michael Jordan would not transcend.
I mean, we have a history of Michael Jordan at his absolute peak in 1989 and 1990.
Yeah.
Like, with not being able to win a title.
Who's the second best player on that team?
A young Scottie Pippen. Mm. A Scottie Pippen who was just becoming an all-star.
Okay. Fair enough. I guess that's where we set the bar at a fringe all-star, like Luol Deng. Yeah. I mean, we saw this also played out with LeBron in Cleveland, and if I said Michael Jordan and Barajal, obviously I think we would all agree they would not win championships. No. So, that's all right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with no.
Yeah,
no.
I want to say, even if it was Iguodala and Horace Grant, my answer is still no.
Yeah, no way, dude.
But, like, Horace Grant in his prime was a great third best player.
Oh, I agree. I think he's better than Chris Bosh.
I don't know about that.
I think so.
No.
No?
Yeah, I agree. No, absolutely. Other than...
You think Horace Grant at his prime was better than Chris Bosh?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Really?
Chris Bosh right now?
Currently Chris Bosh.
I mean, I don't know what to say about Raptors Chris Bosh. It's impossible to evaluate that player.
What happened to that player?
I think he just existed in Canada. Like, it's a currency exchange difference.
I have no memories of Chris Bosh playing for Toronto.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed the heated rivalry when Dwight Howard came into the league, and like Chris Bosh would be like, I hate Dwight Howard. And they would go off for 40 against each other, and then that never happened again. Like, Chris Bosh, the post player, never resurfaced. It's like all of Miami's offensive problems in the first season. And they're like, oh, we think we might need a post player. It's like they fucking had one the whole time.
All right, well, that transitions. Dwight Howard. Do we have Dwight Howard thoughts? My feeling, I don't know what I feel about it. I don't really care. Matthew?
I don't know. I think this is a good situation for Howard, provided he gets the ball. I feel like, you know, he obviously has assurances that James Harden will be much easier to play with. They could, like, run the pick and roll together or something that you know, that he wasn't able to do with Kobe Bryant.
He doesn't want to play the pick and roll, man.
I don't know, like, what Howard is really looking for.
I don't think he does either, and that's kind of the narrative that we have here. Where are the Rockets going to end up? How about that? What seed are they? Are they going to make the playoffs?
I think the Rockets are going to be the fourth seed behind the... This is very much off the top of my head, but behind the Thunder, Spurs, and Clippers.
It's a lot of faith in the Spurs. One of those teams definitely going to fall off. John, where do you got the Rockets next year?
You know, I have no idea, because I have no idea what the hell is going to happen to the Thunder. The Spurs, I feel, will be in the mix just because they're annoyingly there all the time. I mean, not to say that I don't like them, because I still like them, but regardless, Clippers going to be in there. Thunder seems like they may drop out, and I'm going to say that this is the year that Scotty Brooks gets fired.
What are you basing the Thunder dropping out on?
Because they lost Kevin Martin. They don't have a bench scorer.
And we don't really know how Westbrook's going.
They have no offense. Westbrook, I don't know what the timetable is for his return.
This will ultimately make Durant
a better player, but still, it's just them two. And, like, they can't go off for 40 each night. Or they could, and it seems like that's the game plan for the Thunder, but, like, that's not... It's just kind of the same thing. They haven't made any growth.
Yeah.
I just feel like they're going to take another step back again. They're going to be out of the top.
All right, that's
top
good
two.
For
they're
a
not the top two
team
anymore,
to fail. David, where are the Rockets going to end up?
I think the Rockets situation is pretty good for Dwight Howard. I think they make the playoffs as, like, the fifth or sixth seed. You guys are forgetting Golden State.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
No, I wasn't either.
Okay, well, I think they got a lot better.
I think they got a lot better last year. Yeah, well, I mean, I think they got better last year. I think they played better than they were. And I think if you look at the schedule and if you look at games that they played they had a preferable schedule of having teams on back-to-backs and catching teams with injured players a lot last year. But...
Right.
Get on the Golden State bandwagon.
I'm on
That's
it.
Fine.
I mean, I'm definitely
That sounds
on
good
it.
To me. Yeah. I'll be more bullish just because I think the Rockets are going to play really hard in the regular season, and a lot of other teams are not. I would put them in the top three, top two, probably, just because. I don't know.
It's a regular season.
Yeah, regular season. Yeah, that's where I throw them in.
The Clippers could also be real regular season stalwarts. I mean...
They have a coach now.
They have a coach.
So that's something.
And they went 56-26 last year with Vinny Del Negro as their coach.
But they don't have Eric Bledsoe. Oh, wait, they do. Wait, what happened?
No, they
with
don't.
Oh, he did go to the Celtics?
He went to the Suns.
No, he went to the Suns, dude.
And who'd they get back for him?
They got Jared Dudley and J.J. Redick, and they, like, look pretty good on the perimeter.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, they're going to be a better team. They might be the best offensive team in the league. But, you know, their defense is still the same question mark with DeAndre Jordan. And Blake, God, I hope Blake becomes good. Gets good.
Plays defense?
Yeah, plays defense and gets a post-up move.
Because they're going to need him to, because that team's going to be very small a lot of the time.
Blake Griffin sort of has the career arc of a more media-friendly Derek Coleman at this point, I think.
Well, that's somewhat appropriate.
Well, hold on, but back to the Rockets.
Yes.
Does anyone find it hilarious that, you know, Dwight Howard wants the ball in the post, and he said he couldn't flourish in the pick and roll, and that's all the Rockets do?
Yeah, I don't understand at all. I mean, that's what I was saying. I mean, with the Harden stuff, I don't understand at all why... I mean, if you're Dwight Howard, isn't the dream situation where, like, you're maybe, like, the first option for, like, a team with a really good point guard? I don't know. I mean, I don't... Again, like, I don't know what he wants.
He wants to not be the first option. I think that's incredibly obvious.
Okay, so is he happy then just getting, like, 10 shots a game?
The fuck if I know what he's happy with. I don't know him.
But you're saying that he's happy being the second option.
I think it's been pretty obvious in his actions that he is not comfortable being the number one player on a marquee team. I think him not being in the spotlight is something he is much more comfortable with.
But maybe he wants to be. But maybe he wants to be the number one player on a marquee team, which he couldn't be in LA because Kobe Bryant is such, you know, even with his Achilles thing, you know, Kobe Bryant, you know, looms over the Lakers. I don't know. Maybe he feels. I don't know.
Analyze
he wants the accolades of being the man without the responsibility. Now, a very smart teammate would probably, you know, prep him up and, you know, hoist up his ego while paying him lip service while being the man, such as what James Harden should do.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, James Harden obviously has to be the man for that team to succeed.
I would be interested to see if Kevin McHale, the coach of the Celtics, or coach of the Rockets, if McHale tries, experiments playing Omer, Asik, and Dwight Howard at the same time, you know, if he experiments with that Twin Towers thing, because that could be pretty potent.
They could combine to shoot 35% from the free throw line each game.
No, I know, but it could be a pretty potent defensive rebounding shot blocking
and then if
combo.
They could swap them out on offense every say or at least I mean or on def I how would no that would be silly
have you have they has any team ever had two Hakka blank players, you know, like Hakka Omer has happened to the Bulls previously, and I'm on the Rockets too occasionally, and like the, you know, Hackett Dwight happens all the time.
Not on the court at the same time consistently, I don't think so. But I mean, that's a huge problem, is swapping those two out. There are definitely ways to exploit that, that you can really cheat a lot, especially at the end of games. Who plays at the end of games? That's they're gonna have a problem.
For the Rockets?
Yeah.
I mean, well, you don't play them both at the end of games. I mean, you have. What's his name? Chandler Parsons. He's a good free throw shooter. Harden, Lin. I think the biggest problem with the Rockets is Lin. I'm sorry, but I mean, he's.
You should be sorry.
What?
He's terrible, John. I mean, he's
a terrible defender.
I mean,
his
idea of defense is like he goes for the steal as like an excuse to then not defend his man.
But don't you think having Howard inside will cover that up a lot more now?
No, because it didn't for Steve Nash or the Lakers.
Yeah, but that was a totally just broken mess. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it will either, but I think Kevin McHale will coach the team around his personnel and not around having some genius plan in his brain. He's coached enough fucked up teams to, I think, understand that.
Can the Lakers, or can the Rockets make it far in the playoffs? With, I mean, is Howard Harden, is that sort of a core you trust against, say, like...
No, absolutely not. All right, what else happened this offseason, John? What are you stoked about?
At first I wasn't stoked about the Pistons.
Oh, all right, that was... how can you not be stoked about the Pistons? They're so exciting.
Well, before the Brandon Jennings trade, that is.
Right, but after that, I mean, that's the League Pass team. That's a team I want to watch all the time.
They will be the most exciting team for the first three quarters of every game.
They're exciting at the end as well. I mean, Drummond is, I think, going to have a great year. I'm really excited.
But, I mean, they're really dependent on who... I don't know who plays the two guard for the Pistons, but Chauncey Billups is going to end up doing it, even though he said he didn't want to.
They drafted a guy from Georgia with a very long name. He was the 8th overall pick in the draft, like Kadavious Pope or something like that.
Oh, wait a second. Mo Cheeks is the new coach of the Pistons. They're not going to be good.
You don't. But what if anybody has a problem singing the national anthem? Then he'll help him out. That's good.
Chauncey Billups.
Cantavious Caldwell Pope. He's going to be their starting shooting guard.
Or it's going to be Chauncey Billups.
It's going to be Chauncey Billups. He specifically said he did not want to play two guard, and he thinks
he can be the starting point guard.
He can
come off the bench.
I don't see Chauncey Billups playing much.
Stucky can play the two. Stucky is a fine two. Whatever.
Specky, I think, has a juicy expiring contract. We could see more signings along the lines of Brandon Jennings, Josh Smith, Ben Gordon, Charlie Villanueva next summer by the Pistons. I mean, they could.
Well,
really,
Charlie Villanueva's been here a while.
Keep this non-momentum going.
I'm pretty excited for this Pistons team.
I'm very excited.
They look good on paper. I don't know how, actually.
But their half-court offense is going to be terrible.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's no shooting on that team.
I don't know.
Hawks 3.0.
I don't know how Drummond, Monroe, and Josh Smith fit together. I think they'll fit together great.
How don't they fit together?
They're gonna end up trading Monroe, probably.
I don't know. No, I disagree with that. I think Monroe.
I mean, they didn't get high enough, but like, if their best bet is to have Josh Smith at the four,
I think Drummond
handles all the defense.
Yeah, I don't know.
Five. He's more of a four, but they'll stick him in at the five.
Who would you rather have on your team next year, Drummond or Al Horford?
Al Horford in a heartbeat.
Just next year?
Yeah. Al Horford's a really good player.
Who's not going to play the full season? And David, I think we know your answer to that, right? Is it Al Horford?
To be honest, I don't know enough about Andre Drummond to say, but it wouldn't take that much. I mean, I now see his picture, but I don't want to judge based on that.
Really? I think that's pretty much all you should do.
All right, then Andre Drummond.
Okay. With a really killer 37% free throw percent shooting last year. So that could be a problem. I love that we have all these bad foul shooters as the league becomes more and more about penalties.
Maybe since all the other teams are going smaller, the Pistons are really forward-thinking for being bigger.
And then they can play against Asik and Howard at the same time. And basketball will never be played. It will just be a foul shooting contest between big men that can't hit shots. And somehow Brandon Jennings is going to pull this off.
It sounds like a perfect situation for Brandon Jennings.
Maybe we'll remember the Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings signings like we remember the Chauncey Billups, Richard Hamilton signings. Maybe these are brilliant moves by Joe Dumars.
I'm going to say that the only brilliant move he had was getting Rasheed Wallace for 2 cents. I mean, you know, for he got traded 3 times in 3 days?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the coup of his career that sent them over the top.
Ben Wallace was also acquired for next to nothing.
Well, they got him in the Grant Hill sign and trade.
Yeah. So, that's good. Matthew, anything exciting happened this offseason for you, personally?
For me, personally...
Where did you sign?
I'm still a restricted free agent, but... I thought that the Pacers, this isn't the sexiest story, but I thought the Pacers did a really good job.
I agree.
I think their Lewis Scola signing was good. He had sort of a lost season with the Suns, but he's a really good low post player. And now between him and David West, you know, that's a lot of scoring from the power forward slot. You know, Roy Hibbert is pretty much reborn after the playoffs. And Danny Granger, I mean, like... You know, I have been mocked on this show for singing the praises of Danny Granger, but I mean, he's going to
be right out too.
But he's going to be really talented,
really tradable for them down the stretch.
He's either that's true. He's either, as I think I'm copying this from Bill Simmons, I think he's either, you know, valuable as an expiring contract, or also, you know, their seventh or eighth best player. They also have C.J. Watson as point guard and
we love
as backup point guard. That's an upgrade. I just think that overall, they did a nice job maintaining their core and upgrading, and I think that they've, you know, closed the gap more with Miami.
Do you think they will be better than the Nets?
It's really hard to predict the Nets. I think a lot of it depends. You know, the key is Darren Williams and how good he's going to be, and if he's good enough that the other players sort of respect him as the star on that team. I really can't make heads or tails out of the Nets. Garnett and Pierce, they're still really good players. So I guess they have a great starting five. I mean, anytime Joe Johnson is, you know, your least talented player in your starting five, you know, that means you're spending a lot of
money.
And their bench is really good. I don't know. I guess... Due to the lack of coherence on that team, the question marks around Williams and the question marks around Jason Kidd as coach, I would conservatively, you know, put the Nets fourth right now in the East, behind the Pacers, Heat, and the Bulls.
So the Pacers are definitely ahead of the Bulls on your charts, your rankings, your astrological charts.
No, I wouldn't. I think right now I would put the Bulls second and the Pacers third. But I would put the Pacers ahead of the Nets, and I think that the gap between those top four teams is not that much. I think
really,
I think
top four. You think 4-1 is close?
I think 4-1 is close.
You think the Nets and the Heat are similar?
I think yes, I do.
If they played a best of seven, you think
I think the Heat would win?
How many times out of 100?
How many times out of 100 would the Heat win in a best of seven
against the Nets? Yes,
and Nets 65.
And that's close. 65% is close.
Well, how many...
That's asinine, Matthew.
That's not asinine.
If you have pretty much anything, a 65% win percentage, you are dominating.
I think that means that the Nets have a 1-in-3 chance of beating Miami in a playoff series.
Okay, well, that's real shitty odds, pretty much.
That's not that shitty of odds. That means that Miami will probably win 66% of their games. I'm giving them 65%. So that means that Miami will probably beat the Nets in six if they meet as the 1-4 in the East.
This is why I love gambling with you, Matthew.
Well, I don't understand.
33.333 repeating percent is good enough for you?
John, what do you...
The East is just much closer than it was last year. I mean, that's a close...
Agreed! Even with the blockbuster signing of Greg Oden. The Pacers surpassed the Bulls in terms of depth.
Yeah.
I mean, Taj, until somebody gets hurt.
I mean, I'd rather have Scola over Taj at this point as my backup.
Really? Wow. All right.
They're
really
like,
different players. I'd like to have them both.
They are very different, but Scola he can put up 15 like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Occasionally give you 20.
It's extremely hard to project the Bulls at this point. But back to the Nets, one more thing. David, did you hear about Andre Kirilenko signing there?
I did, yes. I read it in Simmons' column.
Oh, okay.
Some kind of mafia...
Well, you know the owner of the Nets
Espionage was the play.
Is Russian, and Kirilenko went there. Do I need to explain this to anyone then? No, he lost. He took money away.
Figure out what happened.
Yeah, well, nothing.
Explain it for the listeners that might be.
All right, Kirilenko chose not to take money to go to the Nets, to take no money, and the owner is Russian and a bazillionaire. And it's obviously something extraordinarily shady happened here. Agreed?
Yes.
No, I can't agree with that.
It's a 65% chance. That's true.
That could be. Okay.
yeah, absolutely.
Of course. I'm sure the union has spoken with Kirilenko because the union has to be pissed about this, except that the players' union in basketball is a giant pile of shit. So things like this can actually happen.
The union has its ups and downs.
What would the grievances of the union be?
The grievance of the union is you always want somebody to take the most money. It's on the table. It's like the only thing. It's like if you take less money, you're fucking everyone else over because the baseline for your contract is going to be less. I mean, that's really the union's primary thing is to make their players money and, you know, make sure they, you know, don't.
Signing for the Nets, though.
It is pretty.
Great signing. Kudos.
It is pretty weird that what this happened. But the Nets do have a good second unit. They have Sean Livingston, Jason Terry, Andre Kirilenko, Reggie Evans, Andre Blatch.
Did you just put Jason Terry in there?
Jason Terry's fine getting. I mean, sort of had a bad year last year. he's arguably on the downside of his career.
Is there anyone on this team that is not on the downside of their career? And I mean anyone.
Brooke Lopez had a career year last year.
Okay.
Brooke Lopez is on the way up. Seriously, and he's an all-star center.
And that's the only person.
Brooke Lopez is the Rick Smits of our generation, potentially.
I think I like Rick Smith better. Even more. He was a much better rebounder.
Dude, Rick Smith was awesome.
Rick Smith was a Chris. Rick Smith was a terrible rebounder.
Really? All right.
Wrong. You are wrong about
okay,
that.
Okay, I'm looking it up. Keep Rick on. Smith's, continue without.
He was a lower rebounder.
Rick. No. I bet anyone anything. Brooke Lopez's rebounding numbers are just as evenly bad as Rick Smith's rebounding numbers.
What metric would you like to use for this? But talk about something else. I'll look okay. this up. I'll give it back to you.
Hold on.
Okay.
Continue, Matt. No, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. I got all into this Rick Smith
stuff. No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, look.
I think
the one thing that's really important, I don't know, maybe I have a unique perspective of this being in Brooklyn, is I mean, did Deron Williams have a renaissance in the second half of his season?
He was just kind of healthier.
Can we count on Deron Williams being the best player on this team? I mean, will the other players defer to Deron Williams? What is Deron Williams' role on this veteran, pricey team?
He is supposed to be the alpha dog.
Yeah, I mean...
But he's not going to be. I mean, with Pierce, there's a lot of personalities to deal with in that locker room. And, I mean, you know, let's see what Jason Kidd can do managing that.
Matthew, you are right. Rick Smith's career average of rebounds is 6.1 per game, and per 36 minutes, 8.2. And I will concede that Brook Lopez is a substantially better player than Rick Smith's, I think, by any measure. I guess my rosy Rick Smith's memory.
I'm glad to be vindicated, but Rick Smith, if you're listening, no disrespect to you.
We love you, Rick.
We miss you, Rick. I was always rooting for those Pacer teams.
One last thing about the Nets, though, is do they have any shooting on their bench? I mean, outside of Paul Pierce
Jason
and
Terry!
Bill Johnson. Oh, fuck Jason Terry. I mean, that's a wash, though.
Nah,
if you have him out there, whoever's he's guarding is going to drop 20 just because it's him.
They don't have much outside shooting. I think that's a good
thing. So, like, and inevitably, when Joe Johnson and Paul Pierce both get hurt, and they're not going to have any shooting.
Yeah, whatever. They'll figure it out. They'll play basketball. I mean, who's going to try for the first half of the season anyway in the East besides the Bulls?
True.
The Bulls are going to kill all their players. They're going to win a fuck ton of games. And then whatever. Nobody's going to
be there
playing
anybody.
David,
is there any way Joe Johnson does not anonymously disappear on this team?
Yes. Jason Kidd is the new coach. Will not let this happen. David?
Yeah. I mean, good luck to Jason. In that, maybe if something similar that happened to Karolinko happens to Joe Johnson,
he might disappears.
He has a conversation and gets a newfound fire. That could happen.
Maybe he gets some fire. It's certainly possible. All right, we're gonna take
Joe
another
Johnson
quick break.
Got a new fire.
All right, we're back. It's time for a very quick game. It's called Rick Smith's Similarity Scores. Can anyone name any of the top 10 players who are the most similar to Rick Smith's? Go!
Wait, what is this? What is this based on?
The similarity scores for the career of Rick Smith's.
All right, am I on the clock?
Everyone is on the clock.
Joe Barry Carroll.
Incorrect.
That was a good
game. Mark Eaton in personality, but I don't know.
There's some interesting names on this list. There's a former Piston on this list. There's
Edwards.
Bill Laimbeer.
James Edwards is number one. That is correct. And there are two former Lakers who I think may have been on the same team. The next two and three.
AC Gray.
Eddie Jones.
No.
Okay, David. Get out of this room.
Surprisingly, Daryl Dawkins makes this list.
Oh, no. That makes sense because Dawkins couldn't rebound either. That makes sense. Dawkins was a horrible rebounder. We had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar when he was 40.
These players played with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The 2 and 3 in similarities.
Vlade didn't play. Michael Thompson.
Michael Thompson is one, yes. And who else was on
Michael
that team?
Michael Thompson. Okay. Come on, think, Matt. Bob McAdoo.
Nope. No.
Don't look. I'm not looking.
All right.
I'm
riled
up.
He's number 41 for most of his career.
Number 41. Mitch Kupchak.
Nope, I'm sorry. He retired after 2005, and his rookie year was in 1990 with the Lakers. So maybe there isn't a Kareem crossover there, but damn close.
I just said Vlade Divac.
No, that is not who we're
thinking of.
Eldon Campbell.
Oh, holy shit.
Good job, everybody.
Eldon Campbell.
Yeah.
All right, well, that concludes that game. Matthew?
Eldon Campbell and Rick Smith have such different backgrounds, but such similarities.
Yeah, totally different games.
Yeah, that's true.
Except for that one time Randy Brown dunked on Eldon Campbell. Does anyone remember that? That was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right, David, you've already mentioned what you are most excited about in this offseason, and that is the signing of Mike Dunleavy Jr., who signed for 2 years, $6 million, taking less from the Bulls than he had from other teams.
That's actually my second most excited.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thing. Well, the first was Josh Smith, so
we
covered that earlier.
Yeah, okay. But yes, Dunleavy. Go ahead. Tell us about your Dunleavian.
Well, the main reason I was excited about it is that
it's Dun Leviathan.
The Dun Leviathan is my avatar on the website. There's a picture of him getting kicked in the face. So now that he's playing for the Bulls, I have yet another reason to root for him. And that's about it. Does he make the Bulls better? Maybe a little bit?
Sure.
I'm a little...
he's okay.
I'm not as optimistic about it as some other people seem to be, but...
It's a good contract.
It's good, yeah. It's a good contract.
Yeah.
I irrationally dislike Mike Dunleavy, but...
No, you can rationally dislike him. He went to Duke. There's a lot of reasons to not like him.
But I did, in preparation for this podcast, I did come up with some logic and reasoning to dislike Mike Dunleavy.
Okay, that sounds good. Matthew's looking at his notes.
Okay. In 2006, Mike Dunleavy played for the Golden State Warriors.
That's a team that is located in Northern California.
In Northern California. For the Golden State Warriors, Mike Dunleavy started all 82 games on a team that went 34-48.
Okay, so he played a lot on a bad team a while ago.
Then, the next year, the Warriors traded Mike Dunleavy, and they went from 34-48 to 42-40. Flash forward.
Oh, God, okay.
2011, Mike Dunleavy plays for the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers finished 37-45.
One of the whitest teams ever.
On one of the whitest teams ever assembled, coached by able Caucasian Frank Vogel. The Pacers let go of Dunleavy the next year and finished 41-25. Mike Dunleavy makes his team better when he leaves. I think that the Bucks will be better next year because Mike Dunleavy is leaving them.
Well, I think that's not the reason, I think the thing is, if you ask Mike Dunleavy to do a lot, you got a problem. The Bulls are not asking Mike Dunleavy to do that much. They have a starting two guard. They have him. It's totally there.
I don't want to ask Mike Dunleavy to do anything.
They're going to ask him to hit threes, which is like they had the worst 3-point shooting of like anyone since they invented basketballs.
Dunleavy will be better in... You're saying Dunleavy will be better in his limited role than Marco Bellinelli was.
Yes, absolutely. He's an upgrade from Bellinelli.
Well, my question is, I mean, if he's your bench, I mean, the Bulls still don't have that great of shooting with their starting lineup.
No, Jimmy it's a Bobber's serious fucking problem, but, you know.
I mean, so Dunleavy is the backup three?
I think...
Is that his role?
I guess that's his role. I mean, he's always been one of those...
For $3 million, it's fine.
I mean, he's versatile. He's, like, kind of blah at everything.
He plays basketball.
Who's the Bulls' backup point guard next year? Oh, Heinrich.
Kirk Heinrich. Well, we don't know about Teague. I mean, you know, summer league heroes. But I think they said that Teague is going to get more minutes, without a doubt. But Derrick Rose is also going to play 45 minutes a game. So,
Can their rookie, can this guy shoot Snell from New Mexico?
I don't know.
Their Florida guy is supposed to be able to shoot.
Okay.
The white guy.
Yeah. The Bulls were really, really short on white players. I'm glad we lightened up a little bit this offseason.
I mean, Gar Forman came into the offseason with two goals, to alienate Tom Thibodeau and to sign more white players.
Yeah.
And he accomplished both of those goals.
Yeah, that's really good. Anytime you get the best coach in the league, you should definitely fire his lover from the team, you know, as part of a ploy so you can get more white players and force him to play them no matter what. That's a good idea. Good offseason for the Bulls. John, how much of the Cleveland Cavaliers starting five can you name?
Dion Waiters.
Yes.
Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
Alonzo Gee.
Herman Earl Clark. Tristan Thompson,
Tristan Thompson and Bynum.
Yeah.
Oh, but this
Biggity Bynum.
But this depth chart doesn't include Anthony Bennett.
Oh, I'm sorry. It does not include number one overall pick.
That's
Anthony
a number
Bennett.
One pick.
But
on your team
he's not going to start. I mean,
yeah,
he can play though.
For people that follow college basketball and all that jazz, what's the lowdown?
I think that's a different podcast you're talking to instead of this one.
I
think it was a shitty draft. Who the fuck knows?
I don't fucking watch college basketball.
I watch it when it's interesting, and or there are great players like there will be next year. I mean, I'm very excited for Jabari Parker and Wiggins, but last year I was not very excited about the players that I saw. I have no real draft thoughts whatsoever, and that Bennett went number one, it will never be seen as any kind of colossal Sam Bowie-esque mistake, because even if the best player ended up being, you know, Nerlens Noel.
I don't know.
If he's the best player,
first
two teams passed him. He got drafted and then immediately traded, so there's a lot of shit going on there.
I mean, Cleveland is obviously a feast or famine team. I wanted to mention them quickly because
this eating disorder that they have.
If
it has to do with the staff
Irving,
infections.
If Irving, well, it's a very there's a, I mean there, it's right by Lake Erie. Irving, Andrew Bynum, Varejao, Dion Waiters. If all those guys, probably won't happen. But if all those guys stay healthy, and another huge if Anthony Bennett plays even close to being a number one overall pick, I mean they're maybe the fifth best team in the East.
And if the Heat play Juwan Howard 82 minutes, or 82 games, 48 minutes light a night, they will not be the number one seed.
I think there's a better chance in my scenario than your scenario.
Fair enough. And the Washington Wizards also
signed
John Wall to a max deal.
People are tuning into this podcast because they want me to quickly improvise thoughts about the Wizards, which is what I'm going to do right now.
That's good. I mean, Okafor is there now.
Okay, this is a good team. Ugh. Okay, you got...
Take it back. Looking at the steps chart.
You got another feast or famine team here, but I see mostly feast.
Really?
I mean, wow. We got John Wall, came into his own at
Are
the end
really
of last year.
Are you really that high on Otto Porter? Mr. I don't watch college basketball.
The two guard?
Bradley Beal.
Oh,
no, of course, Glenn Rice Jr. is also on this team.
Glenn Rice Jr.,
Any
Otto Porter Jr.
Rice?
Yes.
Oh. It's his uncle.
That's good.
We have the nephew of Glenn Rice on this team. And he's the third string shooting guard. I mean, this guy is going to be getting tips from Martell Webster.
He's Glenn Rice's nephew?
No, I was joking.
Oh.
There's no relation.
Junior, that's... I'm not going to fucking name my son after my brother.
No, isn't that... That really is Glenn Rice's kid.
That's the Glenn Rice way.
Yeah, it's Glenn Rice's son. Child,
yes. Someone went up to Tim Hardaway Jr. a few weeks ago and asked him if he was Penny Hardaway's son. He said he was not. But I don't have a lot of faith in this Wizards team.
I have some faith. I mean, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter. I don't think this team sucks.
I love John Wall.
Them to be an eighth seed if John Wall was healthy at the beginning of last season, which he wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, but, I love John Wall. But
no,
yeah.
But exactly. That's a good point, though. You bring up, that's a good point, because everyone said the Wizards were going to be good last year, and then they sucked.
No, people did.
People said at the start of last year, oh, this team could make the playoffs. And they
no, John Wall was injured at the beginning of the year. No one said they could make the playoffs.
Well, they did before John Wall got injured, is what I'm saying. Like, if you, this is, I mean, if you look at, like...
If you look at Randy Whitman, you got to believe in this team.
Sorry, I'm looking at a really funny picture of Randy Whitman. If you look at, like...
What's going on there?
That's a picture for this podcast.
There's some really funny pictures of Randy Whitman.
Speak for the audience here.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
You can't,
if you're listening to this podcast right now, Google Randy Whitman.
Put this,
look at
pause
the
this and just type in Randy Whitman.
Sorry, I can't stop from laughing.
I'll take it away. Matthew, continue your Wizards thoughts.
Okay, so, but if you were to look at, like, NBA preview issues from, like, last September or something, you see, like, the Wizards were, like, a 7th or 8th seed as a pick, and then, you know, people rightfully gave up on them when Wall got injured, but when Wall was healthy in the second half of the season, they were a 500 team. And I think that, you know...
In a conference where no one's going to care, sure. A lot of shit can happen.
No, but Wall plus Bradley Beal plus Otto Porter, you know, Okafor and Hilario are obviously not, I guess...
He's Nene now.
Excuse me. Sorry, that was a big mistake. But Okafor and Nene, you know, not sexy names anymore, but, you know, they're still okay players. I mean, I don't know. They could win 45 games.
Do you think Randy Whitman could take any of his experience playing with Doc Rivers and the Hawks to this Wizards team and give them an idea of camaraderie that he may have had with Doc Rivers or Spud Webb?
Randy Whitman played with Dominique Wilkins and Doc Rivers and Antoine Carr.
Let's not forget
how that might be relevant.
Is he really an upgrade from Flip Saunders is the question.
I think that Randy Whitman is an upgrade from Flip Saunders.
Is that because everyone is an upgrade from Flip Saunders?
You know, I'm really uninspired by coaches right now. Like, I don't.
But they really want to inspire you. Like, it's
know,
the thing they really want to do.
I know that's what they want. I agree, actually,
is the league in a state of distress when Mark Jackson is one of the top-tier coaches?
I think it is. I agree with...
Well, no, no, I disagree. I disagree completely. Have you seen any of those speeches that he'd give in-game? They got me fucking riled up.
It's true.
There's this one game when he's like, when, like, he left in all his bench players that brought back the lead during, like, a Spurs game, and he's like, I would play in games and get back the lead, and coach would take me out. And I'd say, coach, what are you doing? And he'd say, well, we gotta go back to the rotation. You guys brought us back here. I believe in you. You believe in you. I would never insult you like that. Now go insult everyone.
I agree. Mark Jackson did it. I'm fired up just from hearing that right now. Jeez, John.
Mark Jackson did do a great job as coach.
He did.
Last
year. Do you think that bodes well for Jason Kidd that he wants to take his team on field trips to go see Elysium and the Matrix to bring them together? Because the only reason that Jason Kidd got that job is because Mark Jackson did well last year.
Do you think that Jason Kidd will take the team to see the new Woody Allen movie?
I don't think so. I don't think he likes Jews.
Whoa.
Well, he doesn't like women either, so maybe we'll like Woody Allen movies.
Jason Kidd, if you're listening, I mean, we like
he's
you.
He's not listening.
Okay.
If you're listening,
he has
stop.
A Google alert on his name, and this is going to show up on his feed.
If you're listening, Google Randy Whitman right now.
Yeah, it's highly recommended. So, David.
Yeah, Cavs and Wizards, very exciting. I'm pumped for them
to
both make the playoffs.
Okay.
Maybe not the Wizards, now that I've seen their roster.
Yeah, maybe not so much.
You make Mark Jackson coach of the Pistons could win like 50 games.
they're going to win 50 games anyway. What are you talking about? Anything out west that happened? Who's going to make a jump out west that was a shitty team? I mean, it's the West. Someone's coming up from a team that didn't make the playoffs
Minnesota.
Or wasn't the bottom. Are we on the Minnesota bandwagon
I'm
again? Because I really want to be.
Oh, I never want to
keep rolling the dice on Minnesota.
Rick Adelman?
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask.
He's still the coach, right? Because there are question marks that he might quit because of legitimate, like, family health issues.
It wasn't just because he was upset that David Kahn got fired?
I would quit in solidarity if I were.
Yeah. All right, well, Adelman's there. I have no idea who would take over for him.
This is a very intriguing team on paper. They have a great center. I mean, they have a good center.
Matthew, when was the last time you actually looked at a team's roster on a piece of paper? I'm just saying, that phrase would mean nothing.
Can I hold this up so people can see this?
Yeah, of course.
They can see it, yeah.
All right, that's good. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I am looking at the Timberwolves roster right now on paper.
Yes.
Let's look at this on paper. Kevin Love. I misspelled his name on paper, but their center, Pekovic.
Did you misspell Kevin Love or Pekovic?
I misspelled both. Derek Williams, much maligned, but had a good second half of the season on paper.
Would you rather have him or Beasley?
I would much rather have Derek Williams.
I agree.
I think Ricky.
What?
Ricky Rubio is, you know, sky is the limit for Ricky Rubio.
Unless he's shooting.
The sky.
Well, Ricky Rubio.
You mean the team, the Chicago Sky? Are you dissing him and saying that he should play in the WNBA because of his hair?
The sky is the limit.
He could do great
Ricky
in the
Rubio.
WNBA.
I think
right?
he would be the MVP without a doubt. The Chicago Sky would only... They would win more than 65% of their games.
He shoots 43% of the WNBA.
Is this a ladybug scenario?
I like Kevin Martin as an addition. They needed outside shooting. They got outside shooting.
Yeah, I like...
Chase Budinger.
Yeah, sure.
Chase Budinger.
I like all these players. Kevin Love, top five MVP next year.
The Timberwolves are catapulting. I'm imagining somebody catapulting right now. They're catapulting... past the Lakers, maybe the Nuggets. I think they maybe get a 7th or 8th seed.
Would you say that the 8th seed is a toss up between Portland and the Timberwolves?
Who knows what the 8th seed's going to be?
I like the Timberwolves significantly more.
No one knows. How healthy are teams going to be? I mean, a toss-up between the 8th seed. There's so many teams at the bottom.
We need to make a definitive statement right now.
Okay. Who am I choosing between?
I think I can give the definitive...
The Trailblazers and the Timberwolves. The two T's.
Okay.
I don't know.
Thunder.
I'll take the team with the least injuries.
Thunder, Spurs, Clippers, Grizzlies, Warriors... Rockets, I mean, those six teams are going to be the top six in the West, right? I mean, that's
true.
Pretty... I mean, I think we can, like, say with some, you know, reason... I think we can reasonably talk about the 8th seed, you know?
Okay, go ahead.
And I think... I like the Timberwolves a little better than Portland. I'm not totally sold on Damian Lillard becoming a star.
But you love Damian Lillard.
Yeah, you
love
him.
He doesn't need to be a star. He's got Earl Watson backing him up.
Yeah, actually, I really don't like the Timberwolves, or the Blazers roster.
No, it doesn't look very good at all. It's extraordinarily inconsistent. Also, Aldridge is maybe gone, especially if they look like they're going to be out of the playoffs. They'll start selling things off. And, yeah, I don't know. Robin Lopez is a basketball player that does basketball-like things.
I have one question to pose to you guys in terms of power forward. No, just forwards in general.
Okay.
Would you rather have LaMarcus Aldridge or Josh Smith?
Josh Smith.
LaMarcus Aldridge. Really?
Really?
Josh Smith?
No, Josh Smith, really?
Yeah, without a...
Why?
David? Why?
LaMarcus Aldridge.
Okay. I don't know.
That's not even close. Why are you saying really? Josh Smith?
I mean, like, for, like, next year? Or, I mean, are we counting a contract?
Look at their stats.
Okay. I mean, maybe you're right. I just like Josh Smith more, and I feel like, you know, he's on a lot of good teams that do well. If I was building a team, I'd be like, Josh Smith, I can make... He's more versatile than Aldridge. Let's say that.
That I agree with.
If I had a guaranteed star at somewhere else, it would probably change my opinion. I mean, hell, I don't know. I could be convinced otherwise. I just like Josh Smith more.
I really like the idea of Marcus Aldridge as a second...
Marcus Aldridge is the best player in your team. Will never win a playoff series ever. Ever. It will never win a playoff series.
Yeah.
Josh Smith is your best player? Sure, maybe. Shit can happen. He's Josh Smith.
In a week... playoffs. I mean, in a weak playoff bracket.
Yeah, that's something. Aldridge will never be the best player on a team that wins a playoff series. Agreed?
How about that?
Sure, I could maybe agree. I could probably agree with that, but
okay.
Better second option on the team.
Marcus Aldridge is pretty good. I mean, he's like one of the 20 best players in the league.
You could argue that Josh Smith was maybe the best player on one of those Hawks teams the last few years. Yes or no?
Maybe.
I think Horford.
I probably agree, but I mean, here's the thing. You gave me a maybe, and that's a team that won a playoff series. That's my argument.
Yeah, but Aldridge is by far the best player in Portland.
Yeah, and they are not going to make the playoffs.
Well, he doesn't have that much talent
around
him. In a
tougher conference, yeah, with a much shittier...
Whatever, I just want to see him on the Bulls, and I want Carlos Boozer to go disappear to wherever he came from, and...
How much, what would you be willing to give up to get LaMarcus Aldridge as a Bulls fan?
All the money in the world. All the money that the Bulls will never spend. I would have amnestied Boozer, made enough of a hole. I would have given up the Bobcats pick that we have that's sitting there forever. And I would have given up another number one and a number two. And who else do they want? They want something
else. They
probably
want Jimmy Butler.
Sure, Jimmy Butler. Yeah, I'd be willing to part with Jimmy
Butler. I bet they want
Taj. I'll give him Taj. Taj is the logical replacement there, right? I mean, he can still at least play the four for him. I'll give him Taj, two number ones. One of them will end up being an unprotected top one pick. I think they do that. Because Aldridge wants out anyway. But, you know, the Bulls can't afford to do that because we don't... We really like Carlos Boozer here. He was a great signing. Look forward. He's great on offense. He controls the defense well.
He's a good talker.
Did Karl Malone hold the back of his head when he was dunking? Was
on that a signature? Couple,
yeah, no. No, he did.
Yeah, he did.
There's like, okay, there's a sports, I don't know if he did regularly, but there's a Sports Illustrated cover from like year, like 1988 or something, where like he's dunking with his hand on the back of his head. I'm pretty impressed that this game had a Brad Doherty move.
I am too. Bulls versus Blazers in the UTEP two-step. Sean Kemp's off the glass dunk, I thought was excellent. Drexler's tomahawk.
Yeah.
Derek Coleman's, which was my favorite, because the player sizes in that, you know, you're either the smallest thing in the world in the middle or Kareem Abdul. And Derek Coleman was that size, and he had a windmill finger roll that you could do from, like, a foot before the free throw line. Derek Coleman dominated this game. And
I would have to say Tom Chambers dominated that fucking game.
Yeah, Chambers.
Because you could press shoot from the free throw line, and he would dunk it. He would do the dunk. It's like fucking ridiculous.
Yeah,
like Tom Chambers was unstoppable.
It was very impressive. There was controversy in the first game of Charles Barkley doing a quote gorilla dunk, and it was heavily criticized for being racist. And Charles Barkley personally said that he wasn't sure about that, and that was included in the game. And it ended up with players having says of their moves and being compensated for them in video games. It was the first time that there was a real signature element to players in games. Was that?
Oh yeah, he was in Lakers versus Celtics.
Yeah. Well, no.
Yeah,
well,
I remember that.
Yeah, he was in that.
No, because after that, He signed an exclusive deal.
Right.
And he had his own video game, Shut Up and Slam, or
that
something?
That sounds right.
Shut Up and Jam.
That was really dumb.
It's shocking. I can't believe that Charles Barkley had a shitty video game. But then Michael Jordan.
Because they all
was.
Signed exclusive games, because MJ had a shitty contract
was
with
MJ's
exclusive
game.
Company. MJ was player 23, and they could never do any of his signature moves. But you knew
they also
it was
couldn't have him in the starting lineup in a lot of games, like Tecmo Basketball. You just for some reason on your bench had this player whose like grades across were all 99s. It's like, I think I'm gonna put this guy in. It was like, how quick can I call a timeout in this game? How quick can I get a stoppage of play?
Wait, did Jordan have his own like series then?
I mean, he had Jordan versus Bird in
Jordan,
but he was just
Jordan.
Never
that game was
in
awesome.
Any games pretty much. But I liked all the ridiculous moves, and I liked that they only had to choose six, and one of them was Brad Doherty's. And I know they have all the moves now, but if you had to pick one for a video game today, my choice is I would like to see Joakim Noah walk up after a foul is called and players are arguing with each other and clap his hands and yell in their face. I think would be an excellent signature move.
Yeah, that would
if
be
that
hard.
Happened every time there was a foul, I would play that game a lot.
Dude, that happens.
Yeah, it's great.
Already
I want it
game.
In the game. Is there anything you would like to see in a video game, John, that is not included in NBA 2013?
I can't even think of anything because they've covered everything. They have Tony Allen's
clapping.
Shitty release.
Do they
like,
have?
You can, if you create a player, you can go through like an encyclopedic list of people's releases. You can get Zeebo's weird release. You can get Marion's.
Can you get Carlos Boozer to yell "and one" every single time he shoots?
Oh.
No,
Probably not. But their
probably
player
not.
Animations are pretty crazy.
Does Kendrick Perkins frown in this game?
They have James Harden's jab step and his euro step. I mean, he gets in the lane like really easily if you're James Harden.
All right. Well.
In this video game, are there any sort of players that are, like, for some reason seem much better in this video game than they do in real life?
No, the scouting is ridiculous. Because they get...
what about Danny Granger?
I would let you know if I ever played as the Pacers, but I haven't.
Okay.
No, the NBA sends the official scouting reports that the coaches get.
It's very, very official. They might as well not play the season.
Why?
I look forward to the day when it can all be simulated.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that they always... like, the Heat are always not number one. Because on paper, they're, you know, in computer simulation, they're not.
On paper in the computer simulation. All right.
Hey, before we get off this topic.
Okay.
Chris, do you remember the 92 Olympics basketball game?
No, I don't. What's this? Was this like a console game?
Yeah, it was a Sega and NES. Instead of live, whatever year, 92, there was a year that they didn't have either Bulls versus Suns, I want to say. They didn't have that game.
Right, they stopped it after Bulls versus Blazers.
And instead, it was the 92 Olympics.
Really? But it was the same engine running it. It was the same...
Yeah. It was the exact same... But you play as the Dream Team.
I've never heard of this.
It was pretty awesome at the time. I mean, right. I'm sure now it sucks, but like...
Was it called, like, Team USA Basketball?
Yeah, something like that. It was like Olympic basketball or Team USA basketball.
Did they have like the Canadian roster that you played against?
They had the full rosters and they had the different lane size, whatever you call that.
Did the All World team have Bill Wennington on it? The greatest Canadian? Because I think it did.
Oh, okay. Well, you win. You win, Internet.
Yeah, but the Internet did win. You know who else was on this team? Rick Smits and Vlade Divac at the same time. Those are two. And Bill Wennington. Those triple towers are going to be... I don't know how you can really take that down. Tony Kukoc, you know, there. I'm curious who was on Angola's roster, because that person, all of those people, I'm sure, don't really know that they were immortalized in a video game, but still have to get royalty checks, or did for a long time from EA from that.
Slovenia was in the Olympics. I didn't know that.
I don't remember that either. And that's been Sean Kemp Redemption's video game segment for the podcast.
Sean Kemp was great in video games.
He was very good at video games. They won't let me go anywhere.
Talk about Bill Simmons.
All right.
The feud.
All right.
Yeah,
will you, John, just
talk about this too.
Run down the feud? Just tell us the story of the feud. Capital F, not the family
the
feud.
Capital F. Between Doc Rivers and Bill Simmons.
Teammate of Randy Whitman.
So, Doc Rivers is traded to the Clippers in the coach trade that was on and off for about 2 weeks, and a lot of misinformation came out, a lot of between Doc and what was going to happen, and Bill Simmons accused Doc Rivers of, quote, quitting on the team.
It's very serious allegations.
During the NBA draft, and they interviewed Doc Rivers during the NBA draft, and he said, quote, "I'd like to call him an idiot, but I'm too classy for that."
End quote. He's too clever.
Which means
for that
he's calling him an idiot for the sly.
Right.
Listeners.
Yeah. So he really got him there.
To which came one of the most riveting live NBA draft moments in a long time that Bill Simmons couldn't live blog about because he was on it.
Yeah.
And they cut to him, and he goes, the truth keeps changing. He's given different quotes about this. He didn't know. He did know. He kind of knew. He wanted the trade to happen. He was coming back. He needed a year off. When he sticks to a story, I'll believe the truth. I mean, just own it. Just admit what you did. The writing was on the wall. The Celtics wanted to rebuild. You want to be part of it. You wanted to go to the Clippers, and it happened. Like, just own what you did.
So what happened then? This was all like while the trade was being processed and hadn't gone through yet, correct?
Yes.
And then it did happen.
And they got involved in a hilarious Twitter war.
Yes.
Doc Rivers' kid tweeted some bullshit at him. Doc Rivers went on the radio, said he did everything he could to get me fired.
But the best part was Simmons' quote that said, the quote I just retweeted saying he did everything he could to get me fired.
Yes,
wrote letters,
It's an outright 100% lie.
Right, and Bill Simmons called him, he said, "I'd be careful, Glenn. Seriously, stop talking. You're making shit up." He called him Glenn.
Yeah.
Whoa. And then this was just magically resolved. A few days later, Bill Simmons said, "We talked it out. It's cool." Much like his fracas with Isaiah Thomas, which was the center point of his New York Times best-selling History of Basketball book.
Well,
Pulitzer
Prize
winning.
This is a little different because
he did not win a Pulitzer. Do not lie. Seriously, start to fuck up.
Because Isaiah Thomas is very sly, and he knows how to make a friend when he needs a very influential friend if he needs to.
Well, isn't Bill Simmons? Yeah, going. I mean, was it not a little obvious that Bill Simmons was kind of being used in this situation by people that were feeding him information? Because, you know, he is not an outsider whatsoever at all anymore. His specific job is as an insider. And wouldn't you, if you had Bill Simmons' ear, tell him things to make him say things to make other things happen in the basketball world? He is the only writer that is read by the majority of basketball executives at this point, correct? I mean,
I didn't know that.
I mean, I'm sure Peter Vesey is still read by the majority of executives. No, I'm serious.
Yeah,
you made
right.
that assertion.
Yeah. But Simmons actually has influence, and he seems a little bit unaware of that at this point because he's used to his former status as an outsider.
Yeah, he's totally oblivious to the fact of his influence.
He's completely oblivious to
the things that he used to do. I don't agree with that. I think this is an interesting conversation we're having, but I don't think Simmons is oblivious to his influence. I mean, I think that that's part of, you know, his problem right now is that he's becoming more and more like other, you know, famous journalists become, where they're sort of
Use that J word with him.
Famous pundits, if you prefer, where they're sort of at, you know, where a source can sort of, you know, seduce them or get them to, you know, to say something or to do something. I mean, I think that Simmons, you know, Simmons is into being, you know, a big deal and stuff, and is being Jalen told me this the other night. Magic told me this the other night.
Yeah, he really likes that he gets to talk to, like, these famous people, but he also thinks he knows more than them, and, you know, really, in his heart, thinks the Magic Johnson show was, like, the worst thing that ever happened, and has criticized him and should criticize him more. It's a very awkward show. But anyone who says things like, P.S., I will never like July 27th. It will always be the day Reggie died. I just hate this day. True Celtic fans know what I mean. Is a fucking oblivious idiot. And this is also a person that wrote a column, like, from 10 years ago called The Rules for Being a True Fan. It features a picture of himself in the middle with some assholes around him as the example. Like, this person really is about very much the thing that they're about. And he really, Simmons, we've talked about
Do you think
before.
That Simmons has been, I mean, Simmons...
Marginalized is the word I would use. That's my...
Simmons has now been a public figure for 12 years. I mean, how has his sort of public persona changed, if at all?
Well, it's large now. He didn't have one 12 years ago.
Well, I mean, he had an ESPN column.
Well, he's risen from the ranks of obscure blogger to... widely read blogger to a media mogul.
Yeah, more or less.
I mean, you know, like, but him as a pundit or him as a media commentator is going to be his downfall, or as a TV personality is going to be his downfall, because he can't be the fan he is anymore. I mean, they don't force him to be a pseudo-journalist, which he used to toe that line, but now completely doesn't bother anymore.
He's not really interesting, I think, at this point. Anything about him is not very interesting. He's really made himself irrelevant and made himself very rich. And he's also really harmless at this point. Like, there's nothing... I mean, whatever. For all his misogyny... in douchebaggery, like, who really gives a shit about Bill
Simmons? Yeah, I mean, who gives a shit? But at the same time, like, his influence and...
Does anyone hear dad read Bill Simmons or their uncles or anyone?
Probably.
Yeah, you think so?
You're speaking to a first-generation immigrant, huh?
All right. Fair enough. Immigrants don't read Simmons. For the best.
I mean, he is influential. I think that, like, most, you know, casual fans and diehard fans alike read his columns. As you're saying, the majority of NBA executives read his columns. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know if harmless is really a word that I would use with him. I mean, I think that he has a lot of, you know.
Yeah, no, he's definitely not harmless.
I think that, like, I mean, he shapes... you know, this is, I mean, we're talking about basketball, obviously.
No, but, there is too much navel-gazing that goes around about Bill Simmons. I mean,
no, it's not. No, Chris, just let me finish. But he, people listen to him, and people, like, he's sort of like this barometer. I mean, it's interesting in, like, you know, a diffuse media world. There is this sort of, like, one person who has, to me, seems like he has, like, I mean, the gap between him and the second most famous or influential basketball pundit or writer is huge.
Okay.
I mean, he has, you know, people read him at work, and people that are casual basketball fans get all their sort of basketball analysis from him, and then at the same time, you know, sabermetric people read him. I mean, he's a very...
sabermetric people like to get on his show, and they like the publicity from him.
He's
limited understanding of advanced basketball metrics.
Well,
and
that's
any,
not... I'm not arguing that he's good or bad. I'm arguing that he has a, you know,
I just
a
said
tremendous
he's harmless.
Following.
Yes, he has a lot of pull. I'm not saying he doesn't. I mean, I think he actually influences what basketball executives are doing, and I think they use him as a mouth. Multiple sources throughout the league, now that he is an insider, to get him to say things, and I think he's oblivious to that. But who gives a shit? I mean, I just on the broader scale of Bill Simmons mattering, I just think.
But he's, I mean, he's but he is I don't know what you mean by harmless. I mean, again, we're talking about basketball, so I don't know. Like, I mean, he's not going to, like, you know, get us into, like, another war with Iraq, but he is going to, you know, convince us that, like, Paul Pierce is maybe better than Paul Pierce was, or something like that. Like, his opinions have sway among fans, among even NBA executives.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay.
Well, one last, you know, thing about Bill Simmons is that the corollary that I see for him that he probably hates is, like, a Hollywood tabloid reporter.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, that's like...
I don't think look how many Hollywood tabloid reporter, essentially, people he hired for
granted. No, in terms of what he does, outside of his media empire.
Yeah, but
media empire, he's fucking, like, almost close to Jay-Z level for some fucking...
No, that's not even mildly true.
Oh, no, that's not mildly true.
No, that's silly.
He is a mogul.
He's a mogul.
Coasting by on his past acclaim.
Yeah, sure.
I'll let Jay-Z.
But whatever. Who cares? Who cares about Bill Simmons?
No, he doesn't matter.
No, I actually, the more we talk about this, the more I do care about Bill Simmons.
Whether you do or not is irrelevant, because people do.
And the Grantland...
There's care and care. Do people read him? Yes. Do they care?
But maybe
only people who do things on the internet about sports care about Bill Simmons.
But the whole...
True, that's a lot of people, including us. But
the whole Grantland, you know... Site, though, is a sort... I mean, you say that he's a mogul. I mean, that is a sort of, like, you know, aesthetic or lifestyle, even, of this sort of, like, you know, kind of cool potpourri of, like, popular culture or something. I mean, the whole Grantland website is, like, a Bill Simmons brand of, like, this
is... Of course it is.
And well, that's... It's an influential site.
No one's arguing that it's influential or not. I'm talking about... whether this matters to people that read it versus people that do things about sports on the internet. But speaking of writer brands, there was a good interview with the woman that runs The Times, who everybody hates now. Do you know her name?
Jill Abramson?
Yes. And there was talking about the negotiations with Nate Silver, who just joined ESPN, and talking about who the prettiest girl in the room was. His agent described Silver that way, and The Times was like, no, we're always the prettiest girl. But they're incorrect. The writer's brand is way more important, even more important than the New York Times. What would Simmons be without ESPN? Everything's gone. Wipe it all away. Take away his checkbook, where he can write checks, make documentaries, fund this website, do all these things. If there was just Bill Simmons on his own, thesportsguy.com, how influential would that website be? I mean, because Peter King... the most popular football writer also just started his website.
Peter King has won 10,000th the name recognition and influence.
That is absolutely wrong. His readership is much, much, much higher because he writes about football. Peter King has way more readership than Bill Simmons. Yes. I don't know about influence, but eyes that go across their columns. Peter King is much higher.
But there are other high-profile football writers. Maybe none more so than Peter King, but there's a coterie of high-profile football writers, whereas Simmons...
There are not that much. Tell me another pro football writer.
Well, I don't read pro football anymore. Okay. But in the 1990s, Peter King was one of many, along with Paul Zimmerman or Skip Bayless or...
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
But those people don't exist anymore.
And they haven't been replaced?
No. They've been replaced by blogs for the most part and smaller names and things like that. I mean, because if you like your football team, you tend to be, like, super into it. You don't really need national coverage. National coverage is the talking heads all day on that are Bill Simmons-esque on the NBC show.
I mean, is there an influential national...
Which also has Peter King on it.
Is there an influential national basketball writer other than Bill Simmons and Bill Simmons' colleague, Zach Lowe?
I think Zach Lowe is more influential than Bill Simmons at this point. At least,
better. You're fucking crazy.
I don't know. Maybe he's not more influential, but he's better.
But is there an influential national writer that doesn't write for Grantland?
I have no fucking idea. No, definitely not. I mean, but I also don't read a lot about basketball, mostly because I find most writing about basketball to be extremely disinteresting. I mean, Zach Lowe makes Bill Simmons so much better just by standing next to him. Bill Simmons immediately is able to talk about things more interestingly by having someone that knows what they're talking about and not talking about Ubuntu, like, in a really serious, meaningful way, or being a true fan or any of that shit.
Ticket to anywhere, maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere, any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove.
Vinny Del Negro.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're still the same as the last time we talked to you, Vinny. You've had some time this off-season. I've heard you've seen some movies.
I've had much time to contemplate, my dear Chris.
Did you see Pacific Rim? That didn't get very good reviews, but it did well internationally.
I loved it.
You loved it? What did you see it in 3D?
I fucking love the third dimension and the fourth.
What about The Conjuring? That was a sleeper this summer.
The Conjuring was the sleeper hit of the summer, Chris.
Did you see
Billy Taylor gives a top-notch performance. Best since I shot Andy Warhol.
That's a good point. Lily Taylor
also
was excellent.
Lily Tomlin is great in that movie as well.
Did you see The Grown Ups 2? It's a comedy hit this summer.
Chris, if I can be honest... I fucking loved it.
More than the first?
That's one. I felt like an adult. Until it's like I've come of age. They should make a movie of me watching Grown Ups 2 and have it be Grown Ups 3. And it's like the third... It's like the closure of the trilogy of come of age. In the Massachusetts area.
There were some other sequels this summer. Red 2, did you see that?
Let me just say, this Korean guy they got, fucking great. Chris Willis can suck a dick, though.
The Smurfs 2, did you happen to catch that?
I had to catch it with my kids. I got them on the weekends.
I heard there was a lot of torture in that movie. Unusual amounts for children movies.
I don't know. I went to the bathroom. Chris, sometimes I lie about watching movies and I just go to the bathroom and cry.
Well, one movie that had some people crying was not a sequel, but a remake, The Wolverine. Did you stay in the theater for that one?
I fucking walked out. As a true lover of Chris Claremont's Wolverine saga, that movie should be fucking rated X.
Well, one movie that wasn't rated X, but Z, was World War Z. Did you happen to catch that movie this summer?
You know, I could lie again, but this is another movie that I walked out and cried to in the bathroom. Because there were a lot of emotions with the daughter and family, and it made me think of, reflect on past failures.
One movie that also had a lot of emotions with a returning character was Michelle Rodriguez in Six Fast, Six Furious. That seems like it'd be up your alley.
I love, you know what I love more than the number five? The number six. Six times the action.
Well, a movie.
It was also in 16.
A movie that disappointed a lot of people was The Lone Ranger. Did you happen to catch that? Would it meet your expectations?
I've never watched that racist piece of shit. Johnny Depp? He's worse than the Klan.
Well, Vinny. Anything else going on in your life? Any other movies, Netflix, anything else? Any trips you've taken, people you've seen, letters you've written?
I have been watching Orange is the New Black, and let me say, in terms of gender politics, I give it a B. Well,
thanks
know,
for your time, Vinny.
Vinny, can I ask?
Life, I give it an A.
Any plans to get back into coaching, Vinny?
Every day is me training to get back into coaching.
If they called, would you listen?
I don't even understand that question. But of course I would listen, but who's calling? I hear voices all the time. And they just speak to me. I don't listen to them. Especially, you know, like... In the stressful last seconds of a game when they say, oh, Chris Paul is still on the bench. And I say, what? That answers your question. And if we're still playing around, boy, that's just fine. Let's get it.
Midnight Run, The Killing Field, Top Gun, Fatal Attraction, Wall Street, The Breakfast Club, Coming to America, Crime Story, Run, True Romance, Sopranos, The Curse of the Pacino, Miami Vice, Slam, Potential, Ocean's 11, Apocalypse Now. Look, if you haven't noticed, I'm effing old! I don't have time for a big rebuilding project, no thanks. I want to make the playoffs every year, and that's that. We have a chance to get Luke Ridenhauer and Zaza Pachulia. Grab them. Grab them right now. Hold on. I need a kiss. We've come too far. Too far. We're too close. Bull. Goodfellas, Heat, introducing the new Big Three. Step for another swing at the Dwight Howard Pinata. Step right up with your 140 character joke about Dwight Howard being wishy-washy. Step right up. The Bynum trade was a horrific event. Let's embrace that for us. Up, stockpile some assets, make ourselves as bad as humanly possible, take the driver's seat and rig in for Wiggins. Didn't. Maybe.
Yesterday in the crates, I seen the lights.
We Play me backwards.